Nice to be here as always. Hello, Hal, and hello, I don't know how you say that, Suhail, Suhaila, and anyone listening on the radio, good evening. So we are working our way through the Tao Te Ching, and they're very short chapters, and they are have no sort of linear format, so it doesn't matter where you jump in, and they're very repetitive. So if you're new to the Tao, it's today is as good as any to dive in and have a look. And we're going to be talking about a couple of themes today. One is like the feminine nature of receptivity, and I think feminine may sort of be too strong of a word and may put off our male counterparts from sort of relating to it. So we'll look at why that's not the case when we talk about the feminine nature of the Tao, when we're talking about the Tao. And the second is just the ease of contacting the Tao inside us. So it's a short chapter, but before we even begin, we'll just start with a brief centering. And this is really as it sort of gives us an opportunity to just move inside and quiet the mind so we are more open to receiving and therefore more open to contributing or giving. And it also reminds us that we're all connected. And so we're offering to share the blessings of our time together this evening with every being. So just connecting to wherever you feel your heart or the center of your being is. And from here, seeing if we can just connect with everyone, maybe moving into awareness and away from the thoughts. Remembering to breathe. And may all beings be happy. May all beings be at peace. Om Shanti, 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 peace, peace, peace. And we'll take a deep inhale. And relaxing. It seems to be the key, relaxing. My screen has gone dark. There we go. Okay. So yes, chapter six of the Tao. And this is really interesting in terms of translations. There are a couple, and there's one in particular I really like. That we'll talk through. So I'll just read you Stephen Mitchell's because his is super short and it might give you an overall sense, and then we'll read a couple of the others that are a bit more meaty. So he says, the Tao is called the Great Mother, empty yet inexhaustible. It gives birth to infinite worlds. It is always present within you and you can use it any way you want. And that's it from Stephen Mitchell. So I just wanted to talk briefly about some of the points he mentions. You know, we've talked before, and we're only on chapter six or verse six, about the Tao being empty yet inexhaustible, this well that we can tap into any time because it is the source of everything. And it is forever creative, it's inexhaustible. And he says it gives birth to infinite worlds, its potential is infinite. But the one I really wanted to talk about today, the translation, was Wayne Dyer's, and it's got a lot more meat on the bones that we can have a chat about. And his says, the spirit that never dies is called the mysterious feminine. Although she becomes the whole universe, her immaculate purity is never lost. Although she assumes countless forms, her true identity remains intact. The gateway to the mysterious female is called the root of creation. Listen to her voice, hear it echo through creation. Without fail, she reveals her presence. Without fail, she brings us to our own perfection. Although it is invisible, it endures and it will never end. So you can see just how much of a difference in translations there are, and I have like 10 translations and they're all very different for this one. But there are two parts, as I mentioned before, that I think they all seem to have. And one is this discussion of the Great Mother. This is sort of the introduction to the Tao, as we've talked about throughout the Tao Te Ching. Most of the translations switch between he and she. And that's kind of just to, keep us always in that state of unknowing and not getting too settled to a label. And the Tao is like that. It's nothing you can think about. Even the word God, we've attached so many different levels to, and we think of God in our minds as a certain thing. Whereas the Tao is sort of this ever moving, ever happening, creating activity, as it were, and we move into the flow of the Tao. There's nothing we can really hold on to or grasp when we think about the Tao. But in this particular verse, it talks about the sort of the mother aspect of the Tao. Because if we think of the yin and the yang as being two, the masculine and the feminine, the Tao is the two together. It cannot exist in separation. It's always the two together. If you think of the yin and yang symbol, when you look at it as one, the white and the black side together. But within that, there is this sort of feminine side, and the masculine side, and that's often just the receptivity and the sort of activity. That's how they're split. So here we're really talking about the Great Mother. I'm just going to read you some of the things that Wayne Dyer says here, because some are quite beautiful. So he says, this mysterious female energy continually reveals itself in perfection. And here we are invited to an awareness of that voice of creation echoing through life in myriad ways. Living creatively is how I describe existing with conscious awareness of the presence of this feminine principle. This mysterious female is always birthing, and the Tao Te Ching speaks of the gateway to her as the root of creation. It's telling that we have the ability to tap into this unlimited field and co-create, or as I've already said, live creatively through the Tao. The never-dying formative energy is both our heritage and our destiny, which I just love. The Tao sort of has no past or no future. It's in the present, so it becomes both at once, our heritage and our destiny, functioning whether we're conscious of it or not. What awareness accomplishes through practicing the Tao is to let us participate in the process. So when we sit back from the thoughts, when we manage to step into awareness, watching the thoughts, so we become essentially awareness, watching awareness, that's when we sort of begin to practice being in the flow of the Tao. Because we're removing ourselves from the duality of the world and stepping back into this awareness of it all, stepping back into moving towards the oneness. And that leads us back, says Wayne Dyer, towards the wholeness that is our ultimate earthbound task. Although his writings were almost 3,000 years old, Lao Tzu is offering 21st century advice here, and it's a message that's timeless, says Wayne Dyer. Words may change, but be assured that feminine energy can and will bring you to your own perfection. If you choose to be aware of the inherent creativity that resonates deep within you, where the invisible Tao sings the loudest, you'll assist the birthing of new ideas, new accomplishments, new projects, and new ways of understanding your life. So I wanted to talk a bit today about this idea of birthing when we're on a spiritual path, and what that means. So let me just see if there's anything else I wanted to share from him here. He says, know that you are a divine creation birthed not by your parents, but by the great spiritual divine mother, the Tao. So he talks of the feminine energy here as the Great Mother. The Salada Tao translation calls her the Primal Mother. And he also mentions that another translation of the Chinese characters for this particular sort of couple of words is also dark womb, which I really love, or dark mare as in a female horse, but dark womb, which I thought was maybe a really helpful way of thinking about this sort of place of creativity. And as we talked about before, Tao is very much okay with darkness. It's very, you know, a lot of spiritual teachings, all they talk about is the light, but the Tao is it says it's dark, it's mysterious, it's this sort of, you know, this womb, that's where creation comes from, out of the dark. So let me just and Solana Towler says here, that is confusing, says how it is. And I guess you sort of go which one makes you feel more comfortable. For me, I felt like I was becoming very much one of those spiritual seekers that only was happy with light and angels and thinking about things in those terms. And anything that I considered to be dark energy, or, you know, people talk about lower vibrations in these sort of pathways, and I found like I became almost like a snob, or I was starting to judge what was, I was creating these new beliefs that this was light and this was dark, and this was a high frequency and that was a low frequency. And I actually felt, for me, that was unhelpful. I know for a lot of people it's not, it's actually helpful for them to feel, to make that separation in their mind, but for me it was not helpful. It was much more helpful to flip things on their head and say, okay, light is dark and dark is light, and try and think of things always just being this sort of oneness, I guess. The dark is the quiet, right? I'm going to read something in a minute by Barbara Brown Taylor, which is exactly that, which she talks exactly about the dark being the quiet. So I just want to read this part from Solala Towler's translation and his commentary on this chapter. And he's actually quoting someone else. It's, here we go, Hua Qing Ni. I'm sure I've said that wrong. And he says, every moment of our life is now pregnant with the next. We are all pregnant mothers in some way. The one who can control his life is the one who knows how to integrate himself with good energy to reform himself so that he is reborn in the next moment and the next, continually following this way of life. This is cultivation of life. This is cultivation of the Tao. What essentially he's saying here, in sort of a Chinese way of coming at it, or Chinese tradition and Taoist tradition, is that if we can stay present to every moment, then we are being reborn in that moment, or there is a birthing in that moment, because we're allowing to come through us what is, we're allowing to see what is arising. That might be another way of looking at birthing, what is arising, instead of only adding the thoughts. You know, whenever we look at something, we tend to see it through this lens of, let me give an example. So I'm looking at this book, but to me, this book is something I purchased. So I think about that, and I think about reading it and things from the past. We always bring in the past with us when we look at something. It's very hard to look at something completely afresh. So when we sit in the Tao, that is when we move back into this place of awareness rather than associating with the thoughts, then we begin to see what it is, which means we are allowing things to arise, to be born in that moment. And for me, that's what I sort of get from this verse, is this practice of being at that place of allowing things to be born through us, moving into that dark womb, so that things can come up. Should I talk about the cake? Right, we'll talk about this next. So I just wanted to share this practice that I have been doing, and I was given this as a practice for trying for a baby. But actually, when I did this practice, I'm sure you're wondering what the hell I'm going to say. It's nothing like that. When I did this practice, what I found was it was so helpful, actually, on a spiritual for a spiritual path. And there's a way of changing it from the word nest to something that embraces men more. I think it would be really, really helpful, whether you're a woman or a man, whether you're trying for a baby or you're already through that period of your life and on out. So I just wanted to share this because it was really interesting to me, and I think plays into this whole idea of this birthing from this dark womb of ourselves and sort of being pregnant. And I mentioned Tess Hughes's book last week, and when she talks of her awakening, she says that she felt like she was pregnant with something, that something was coming through her, or that something was pregnant with her, that was giving birth to her. And it was really interesting how she felt like the two. And this practice I'm going to share, maybe practice is the wrong word, sort of helped me see this. So what happened was, when my partner and I have been trying for a baby for quite some time, and I went to see a shaman who suggested what I do is build a small nest. So upon her advice, I went out into a park, into the woodlands, and I collected sticks. And was thinking about these sticks of creating, with the idea of creating a nest for something to be birthed into. So, I thought about making it comfortable and what would I like to be there, and collected feathers and rocks and stones, and then came home and in a small area in my home made a tiny nest, probably the size of a side plate. Maybe, or a saucer. And in it, was sort of comfy materials and sticks around the side. And then I was intuitively guided to put some crystals around it. And then she said to me, the shaman, to every day sing to the nest, talk to the nest, give gifts to the nest. So I would each day do those things. I would share for the day. I would, during the day be thinking about the nest, because I'd be thinking about, well, what could I give this nest? So I might pick a flower or find a stone or a picture in a magazine I liked. I might add a photo. I had a photo of me and Bill by it. And every day different ideas came to me now. So I ended up with all this clutter of things around the nest. And then after about 2 months, I'd say, I felt the need to completely redo the nest. The nest no longer wanted all of these things. The nest wanted to be surrounded in stones and be very earthy. So I went back to the park and I collected stones, and at that time, bulrushes, I think you call them cattails, I think, something like that, had been shedding. So there's all this lovely fluffy feathery plant stuff that I used sort of the base for a nest, and I can put it. It wanted to be in the dark. That's what I got the sense of. I didn't want to be out in the open where it had been. I wanted to be tucked away in a very quiet place in the corner of a house. It was very unusual. I just was listening, and this is what I had told to me. And then I realized after 3 months of being with the nest, and actually sometimes I didn't even talk to the nest. The nest kind of just wanted to be left alone for a while. It's only recently I've started talking to it again. What I realized, however, was that this nest actually represented me, and giving myself a place to be birthed, a safe place to be birthed. And this sounds a bit weird, but what I was feeling, in addition to obviously trying for a baby, was that there was something inside of me that wanted to awaken more, and it needed this place birthed, and sort of maybe some energetic thoughts or opening of space around it to be birthed. But at the same time, it was me that was the great mother. That was the one looking after the me being born. So it's very, very unusual practice and sounds a bit off the wall, but I really recommend, and whatever way you want to do it, whether it's you don't call it a nest, you call it an altar or instead. But this idea of, and there are plenty of male birds who do all the looking after the nest, so I guess it's not particularly, it doesn't have to be like a feminine thing in that way. But it was really interesting because, you know, I'm not pregnant still, but I really felt that what she was guiding me towards was actually just getting in touch with a part of myself that was very motherly and maternal, but also getting in touch with the part of myself that needed or wanted to be birthed, all that sort of stuff that wanted to come through. And it's been a very intense 3 months actually working around. And I know that a lot of it's come from this practice, or I don't know what you'd call it. I'm going to just call it practice of building this nest and nurturing this nest, and then noticing in me what arises in that nurturing, and then noticing what's coming up for me, maybe as a result of being nurtured. So really, really fascinating. And I, as I say, it's something I highly recommend, just because so many things come up for you in this nurturing phase, and I guess you get to step into the shoes of being the dark womb and the great mother and that which is being born all at once. Maybe have a little mini taste of it. So that was that, this idea of being, you know, giving birth to ourselves and being pregnant at the, and being the primal mother. And then when it says the Tao, the gateway to the mysterious female is called the root of creation. For me, that is the dark womb. That is the heaven and earth all together before anything sort of arose. And so just the sitting and the waiting, and then allowing whatever's in the womb to then be birthed, to be nurtured and be birthed through. And it's before the light, right? Right, that's a great way of looking at how... And this I feel like is possible for us all to imagine, because we were at some point at that tiny spark of creation that arose in the dark womb that came there, and so we were, you know, during all those 9 months or so being created, we were being created, we weren't doing anything. We were being created, and then we came into the world and then decided that we were the creators, even though we're aging and we're not even, you know, there's nothing we can do about it. We're going through life, but we still have this idea that it's us doing it, instead of just reminding ourselves we came from this dark womb. We could step back into that place of just awareness and allowing what to happen, allowing for everything to arise. So I wanted to read something from Barbara Brown Taylor's, I was not looking for this, I was looking for something else in her book, and then I saw it and thought it might be perfect. And I guess it's going to sort of tie in a little bit to what you're saying, how about for you the dark is the quiet. So the whole premise of the book, Learning to Walk in the Dark, is she's afraid of the dark, and so Barbara Brown Taylor goes and does all these things, all these things that involve being blindfolded and being in the dark, and one of them is to go into a cave. So I'm just going to read a couple of things that she wrote, because I thought they were really, really helpful. Sorry, there we go. And one part she talks about the silence. So I want to share this. This isn't actually about the dark, this is about her time in the desert, but she compares the two. She says that she moves into this cave, and she's taken there with two people who are, you know, cave experts. and she says, there is no light coming in. There are no dimly glowing numbers on a watch. There is no moon. This is what people mean when they say it was so dark, I couldn't see my hand in front of my face. There is nothing to listen to, nothing to touch, or to compensate for this loss of sight. There is not a sound to be heard in this cave. My ears are as blind as my eyes. Up until now, the quietest I have ever been was in the Sinai Desert, where I sat in silence so thick that it felt like a presence. It was completely alien and completely comforting at the same time, like being back in my mother's womb, only quieter, since I could not hear the beat of her heart or the bellow of her lungs. I could hear mine like never before, though, but beyond that, all I could hear was nothing. Nothing for so long that when I finally heard finally heard an airplane approaching, I looked up only to see a desert fly coming at me instead. Once it roared over my head with full Doppler effect, the sound of its wings grew fainter and fainter until I could not see it anymore. After that, I listened to more nothing until I could hear something that sounded like the hum of a high voltage wire. Since there were no wires for miles around, the sound was obviously coming from inside of me. Through trial and error, I learned that I could make it louder by clenching my jaws and softer by letting them go again, but nothing could make it stop altogether. I had never heard my life before, but that was what it was. It was the sound of my life in the silence of the desert. Years later, I would hear the American composer John Cage describe the same thing. Famous for exploring silence as seriously as he did sound, he once isolated himself in a soundproof chamber at Harvard so he could experience true and complete silence. When he noticed two distinct sounds in the room, one high and one low, he asked the sound technician what they were. "The higher one is your nervous system," the soundman told him, "and the lower one is your circulation." The experience gave both his life and his music direction by introducing him to the concept of non-intention. His body made sounds without any intention on his part. What might his music sound like if he allowed it to proceed by non-intention too? "I did not know immediately what I was doing," he wrote, "nor after all these years have I found out much. I composed music. Yes, but how? I gave up making choices. In their place, I put the asking of questions." And then she says, "Back in the cave, I do not know what I'm doing either. There is no way to tell time, which means there's no rush, and there's no light, which means I do not have to worry about how I look. There is no one beside me, so I do not have to come up with something to say, and there is no threat." So before I talk about what she says about the cave, I just wanted to share this because I felt like this is what the Tao is really getting at. And the second part of this particular verse, when it talks about listen to her voice, hear it echo through creation, I felt was really reflected in this idea of silence, this experience of silence that Barbara Brown Taylor shares here, and about the musician, that if we could just, or the composer rather, that the body grows without us knowing, the body makes sound without us trying. So to be within the Tao is to be just back in that place of awareness and watching whatever arises. Such beauty happens and we miss it. Like, how wonderful to be able to hear our nervous system or our circulation. And yet we miss all these things because the mind is just rambling. But this is really the beauty bit, I thought, of this idea of being in the cave or in the dark room. Hal says, "How do we say I love you without sound?" Ooh. I would say I love you can only be said without sound. I don't know. Depends if your I love you comes with a I need you to say it back. So she goes on here about the cave. So now she's taken into a much deeper and darker cave in our minds. So she'll always say, "I love you" in our minds. So we go into this, she goes into this deeper, deeper cave, turns off her lamp. And she says she suddenly thinks about all the great spiritual leaders whose lives changed in caves. Gautama Buddha meditated regularly in caves, setting such an example for his followers that if you go to India, China, or Tibet, your tour guide can almost always take you to a meditation cave. In Bhutan, you might even be invited to prostrate yourself in front of a niche in the wall where a great master once sat, hollowing out the rock by the force of his consciousness alone. Muhammad spent a lot of time in a small mountain cave 2 miles outside of Mecca, where he meditated and prayed for days at a time. On what has become known as the Night of Power, the angel Gabriel came to him there. "Recite," Gabriel said. "Recite what?" Muhammad asked, and Gabriel told him, and so the first verses of the Quran spooled into the world from the belly of the cave. I love that. I did not know this story. So just sort of being in this dark, quiet place, Muhammad was able to hear Gabriel recite the words of the Quran. And then she moves on to say Jesus was born in a cave and rose from the dead in a cave. Like most Westerners, I always thought of the stable in Bethlehem as a wooden lean-to filled with straw, at least until I went to the Church of the Nativity in the West Bank. There I learned that caves made the best stables in Jesus's day. No wind whistled through the boards, no predators sneaking up on you from behind. The traditional place of Jesus' birth is not in the Church of the Nativity, but under it, in a small cave under the altar. The cave in which he rose from the dead is long gone, covered over by the huge Church of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem. Today, visitors stand in line to enter a mausoleum that looks nothing like a hole in the ground. This may be just as well, since no one knows for sure what happened there. By all accounts, a stone blocked the entrance to the cave so that there were no witnesses to the resurrection. Everyone who saw the risen Jesus saw him after. Whatever happened in the cave happened in the dark. Just love this. As many years as I have been listening to Easter sermons, says Barbara, I have never heard anyone talk about that part. Resurrection is always announced with Easter lilies, sounds of trumpets, and bright streaming light. And again, we're back to this idea of always about the light. But it did not happen that way. If it happened in a cave, it happened in complete silence, in absolute darkness, with the smell of damp stone and dug earth in the air. Sitting deep in this heart of this organ cave, that's where she is, I let this sink in. A new life starts in the dark, whether it is a seed in the ground, a baby in the womb, or Jesus in the tomb, creation starts in the dark. So I just thought that was so beautiful. I imagine it's pretty dark within the womb. Yeah, I would think there was some light coming in from when the mother opens her mouth or something. Yeah, I imagine it's absolutely pitch black. And I'm not even sure at what month the eyes even open. I think they do open in the womb. I'm yet to be pregnant, so I haven't read up on all those juicings things that happen in the womb. So I thought that was just really interesting, this sort of idea that we have of, let's say, the light, but actually thinking about connecting to that place inside of us, which is, probably pretty dark in there when you think you're closing your eyes and you're heading inwards and looking for this place of the Tao, of becoming the awareness of what's there in the silence and the darkness of this primal mother womb. And then the second part that I wanted to talk about was this part. So listen to her voice, hear it echo through creation. Without fail, she reveals her presence. Without fail, she brings us to our own perfection. And I thought this was so comforting, and almost a little surprising coming from Lao Tzu, sort of leaves you in this state of sort of not knowing, knowing, not knowing. And here it is very, very clear. Listen to her voice, hear it echo through creation. I mean, if you listen for it, you're going to hear it. Without fail, she reveals her presence. Without fail, she brings us to our own perfection. So to me, this says it's a done deal. We don't have to worry about it. It's all we have to do is go into this place where we can hear it. So whether it's your cave or whether it's just a metaphor of a cave, whether it's closing the eyes and going into silence and listening within, then really that's all we have to do is go inside. Which is so simple, and everyone always says that the spiritual path is incredibly simple, and yet we sort of make it complex by studying everything we can, which is all part of the path. It's all supposed to happen that way, but in the end, you sort of gradually, as I imagine you, how I imagine it is like a big spiral, and you're born in the middle of the spiral, and then your life carries on. You go round and round the spiral outwards, and then at some point on the outer ring of the spiral, you begin to turn back in. And then as you come slowly in, you gradually sort of hit these points where you go, oh, it's so simple. And then it becomes more complex. Then you're going, oh, it becomes so simple. And gradually and gradually, you become more and more aware as you move towards the center of the simplicity of returning to this natural state, your true nature. And it's really just to just go within and to listen. But I did really love this part because this whole idea of without fail, she reveals her presence. If you listen, you will hear. So I'm not particularly good with Bible quotes, but I gather there is a quote in there about whoever has ears, have them hear, or something, or whoever has the ears to hear, let them hear. It's a similar thing here. So just if you go inside and listen, you will at some point hear it. And I think about yoga teachings as well. There is without doubt that if you chant Om and bring your full willingness to that chant, at some point you will hear the sound of the universe. That's sort of like a guarantee for you. And this is sort of a similar thing. If you listen to this, if you go into that dark room, if you look for that dark room inside yourself, you will hear creation. You will hear it. You will hear her. You will feel that presence of the Tao. You'll feel that whole creative force inside you coming through, which is phenomenal. Okay, I'm just seeing if there's anything else I wanted to share. As Hafiz says, just sit there right now. Don't do a thing. Just rest. For your separation from God, from love, is the hardest work in this world. Okay, so a couple of things I wanted to talk about with this, and then we'll wrap up for the evening. Maybe have a song if we have time. One is all we have to do is go in and listen. And when I think about listening, I think about receiving. When we talk about feminine nature, it's often with this, or the feminine nature receives. And so I sort of felt like maybe that's what this verse is also getting at, this idea of receiving, of going within to the womb and receiving what is there for us, allowing whatever is going to happen to come through us. And how, that can be a challenge to marry in the mind, and this comes back to, we've talked about this sensing. Yeah, that's a nice way of putting it, how sensing what's there. Actually, I was so just sorry to take a sidestep at the minute, but you've just reminded me how I was listening to a talk today by Arnaud Desjardins, who is phenomenal. And he has since passed away, but he has some teachings. It's kind of old school. You have to he had an ash He has an ashram in Canada, but you have to write actual written letter to them to ask if you want to go and visit. They've also had just a handful of DVDs that was taken at a conference of his, and you have to hand write them a letter and ask for them, and they'll write back to you. But very lucky to have been able to have a look at some of these DVDs. And today I was looking at one of his teachings where he says he was taught, and he studied with a lot of people, Anandamayi, I'm forgetting the name of a couple of the masters he'd studied with. But he says that Gurdjieff, that it is seeing. They call it, instead of thinking, seeing, when it comes to using the mind. And he says seeing is sort of bringing the intellect to everything. Thinking is okay if it's done, you know, with things that are helpful, like intelligence. Thinking generally, though, 90% of the things we think are not helpful at all. It just talks about the past, talks about the future, worrying, criticizing, judging. Like 90% of thoughts aren't helpful at all. So they call it thoughts that are helpful, seeing instead, this wisdom and seeing. And then he talks about the heart, and this is sort of getting to your point, how he talks about the heart and breaks that into two, between feeling and experiencing emotion. And very much his teachings, Arnaud Desjardins, are about letting go of emotion and then moving into this sense of feeling instead. So feeling and seeing rather than thinking and having emotion. So sort of moving into that place as a place to receive, you know, which is sort of unusual, but that's how I kind of think about it. When we're trying to move within and listen, we're trying to shift our place in our hearts to just feeling and sensing. And then with our minds, letting go of thoughts and moving into being open to see clearly. So we talked about Wu Wei before, and we'll come back to Wu Wei over and over again, I guess. But Wu Wei is this idea of not doing. And that becomes sort of challenging because you go, okay, well, if it's all there and all I have to do is listen, then I don't have to do anything, which can sort of trip you up on the path, because then you think, well, I just won't bother with these Course in Miracles workbook, and I won't bother reading the Tao Te Ching or contemplating or sitting down to meditate. And that's not what Wu Wei is. It's this idea of just moving inside and receiving, this effortless effort of just allowing something to come through you. And with the gentle contemplation, I always get it wrong, and the gentle healing contemplation, the gentle contemplation healing with Regina, that class on a Tuesday that we're doing, we're working through A Course in Miracles. And one of the workbook practices this week, I suddenly understood, even though I probably heard it, I didn't have the ears to hear, I'd already heard it before, this sense of all you have to do is go inside. That is all you have to do. Because the mind will tell you, well, why don't you try and be kinder? You know, why don't you, as you want to sort of cultivate all these lovely characteristics of a, you know, a teacher of God or God himself, why don't you go and serve more and do kind things and say, and don't judge and do this and do that. And what I realized instead was that that's actually probably the ego talking, and that is not Wu Wei. Yes, all those things are wonderful. However, if you just go inside and, you know, practice awareness, watching awareness and being in this place of awareness, being in that dark womb of receptivity, what comes through there, your actions will be kind without you even having to try. And because you won't be judging, for one, so, and you'll be in tune with what needs doing. So you'll be in, Jay's in the room, says involuntary kindness. Yeah. So all of a sudden, there is no doing, even though you are doing. And all the things you wanted to do with your spiritual practice, you know, you don't no longer have to think about them. You just have this one thing you're doing, just going inside to this place of the great mother, the dark womb, the place of the Tao, whatever you want to call it. And from there, everything will be delivered that you want. And which I thought was beautiful, because what it showed me was that, and I feel like, you know, I'm not an outlier here, what most of us want, or what all of us want, is to be kinder, to be more loving, to not be in pain, to not judge others, to not hate. And we spend so much time with the mind telling us, we'll do this and that's good, you know, you do this and you'll be a good person, you do that. But instead, all we have to do is go inside, because we are naturally that state. That's who we are naturally. So we just, you know, have to keep turning, just turning within, and that's it. And so I thought that was really helpful. And then I was thinking about the moon, and it's new moon tonight. I'll talk about that in a minute. But in Sufism, there is a practice around contemplating the nature of the moon. And I wanted just to share this. I wrote this a while ago. So in Sufism, as you'll know, Hal and Jay and Doreen from studying Sufism for the ministry, there are 99 names or qualities of the beloved, and each represents a facet for us to explore and experience in order to become united with the beloved. And the second of these pathways of the heart is Ar-Rahim, the moon of love. And when we're called to it, we are asked to deeply consider our capacity to receive and look to the moon. And I just love this pathway. I think it's my absolute favorite, that the Sufis are telling us if we want to live a life of love, we have to know what it means to receive. We have to stop resisting. So I'm reflecting on the moon can help. So tonight's not going to help because it's a new moon and you won't see any moon at all. So wait till it's full. But however, when the moon is full, the light that bounces off the moon is enough to illuminate streets and yards and forests and lakes and oceans. I think it's about 11% of the sun's light, and a full moon can receive and then bounce off. So when we start to contemplate the moon in this way, we realize that the moon isn't giving us any light. It's not doing anything. It's not beaming light onto us. Instead, it's receiving light from the sun, and we are just benefiting from the reflection of that light off of the moon onto us. So the way I put it is that the moon of love, Ar-Rahim, teaches us that when we allow ourselves to receive, the world gets our moonbeams. So, and with that in mind, so tonight perhaps it's useful. You go outside and you'll see the new moon is not receiving any light, and so there isn't any light. And then you'll watch over the next 15 odd days or 14 days, the crescent get bigger and bigger as it begins to receive more and more and more. And then you sort of think to yourself, well, how many moonbeams would the world get if the moon could just keep on accepting more and more and more light to it? And while the moon can't obviously grow any bigger, there is, however, no end to how much we can open ourselves up to practicing receiving. So I thought that was just sort of a sweet teaching, that maybe it's helpful when you're out in nature and at night when you see the moon. It's like a reminder of what it means to be open and receive, what happens when we receive, other people receive more. And we know this, but it never harms to keep drumming it home, because I was thinking today, how many times have I read this and heard this, and yet I probably only remember it in my daily life like 10 times a day, if that, on a good day, for about 20 seconds. So that was really all I wanted to share for tonight. On this idea of moons, I just wanted to mention, and it's a bit, I guess it's a bit off topic, however, the Tao is very much about nature, and there is a connection between the sort of following the paths of the moon and the Tao, which I'll talk about another time. But tonight is a new moon, and if you are so inclined, it's a really good time to ask the Divine Mother, the womb of creation, or to tune in to that creative essence for any assistance of anything that you want to grow over the next 2 weeks. So the way the cycle of the moons works is that obviously, you know, it's considered an empty moon right now that is collecting more and more light. and is growing in size over the next 2 weeks. And it's thought that the energy, because, you know, a lot of water and the moon governs water, that whatever intentions we set will be taken along with the moon. So if we want to bring more joy into our lives, if we want to bring more remembering to go inside, or more teachings in our life to help us remember go inside, there are all those are beautiful seeds to sow in a new moon that will come to fruition by your full moon. And then the full moon, you practice releasing. That's kind of the cycle. And if you're a gardener, you'll know this, because you garden, you plant seeds in a new moon, and then the water rises up as the moon waxes, so nurtures the seed ready for a full moon when it's 14 days in and gets a lot of light in the day and at night. It's a similar sort of energetic feeling with our intentions. But so you can often just write a little note to the moon: help me out for the next 14 days, if you would, Mother Moon. This is what I'd like to bring into my life. So that's it. I just thought, while we're on the topic of moons, so does anyone want to share anything? I saw your note, Jay, thank you. Share anything before we wrap up with a song? How to be more open to receiving more awareness of my oneness. I love that. I'm going to nick that from you, Hal, and write it on my little note and put it out. I tend to, you can put the note on a windowsill, or you can put it out in your garden under a stone so it doesn't blow away. So the energy of the moon can see it. And it said that the energy of the moon, it lasts a couple of days either side of the moon. So if you don't do it tonight, you can do it tomorrow. Okay. So, you've got a little while. What song was I going to play? Okay, here we go. Sorry, I'm just looking for it on my iTunes. I was really couldn't decide between about four songs, so now I've lost the one I was going to play. There it is. This is one of my favorite songs. It's So Much Magnificence, and it's actually about the ocean, but you know, it's the water element, and we're talking about the moon. So I just thought we would end with this evening. It's really lovely to be here. Oh, okay, Cheryl's heard of it, great. And I hope you all have a really lovely week, and I'll see you. Blue Moon, how's it? That would have been a great one. That would have been a great one to play. I hope you all have a lovely week, and I'm excited to see you during the week, hopefully. Thank you. Folks, over to you, Cheryl, and have a lovely evening.